I'm Steve Potter, and welcome to Cityscape. St. Louis's New Line Theater bills itself as the bad boy of musical theater, but the group may have outdone itself with next week's opening of Jerry Springer the Opera. Artistic director Scott Miller says this production is the most offensive work New Line has ever done. He'll join us later for a preview, along with actor Keith Thompson, who plays the controversial talk show host. And we'll also talk with the St. Louis Zoo's curator of birds about next week's reopening of the Penguin and Puffin Coast exhibit, which has been closed for almost a year and a half. We begin with the passing of a legend. Clark Terry was a trumpeter, composer, and music educator. His career in jazz, more than 70 years. Clark Terry was born here in St. Louis in 1920 and died last Saturday in Pine Bluff, Arkansas, where he'd been living after entering hospice care a week before. He suffered from advanced diabetes. He had just turned 94 in December. Earlier in his career, he played with the likes of Count Basie and Duke Ellington and later became the first black staff musician at NBC, playing with the Tonight Show Band, and here to pay tribute to the man and his music, the longtime host of St. Louis Public Radio's Jazz Unlimited, Dennis Owsley, and Gene Dobbs Bradford, president and CEO of Jazz St. Louis. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank
Good
you
to
very
be
much.
Here.
And I hate to see you under these circumstances, because I know you both, to more or less degree, had come in contact with Clark Terry. So let's begin this way. When was the last time that either of you saw him perform or actually spoke to him, Dennis?
I saw him perform in 2011, but the last time I spoke to him was mid-90s at some point. He was down at Jazz at the Bistro before Gene, and I took one of his mentors, Eddie Randall, down to see him, and we had a little bit of a talk then.
And Gene?
Yeah, the last time I saw him perform was in 2009. Of course, we had him at, I presented him at Jazz at the Bistro in 2003. In 2009, it was a benefit over at Harris Stowe University. At that time, we were all wondering if he was going to be able to play the trumpet, because as his health was deteriorating, he wasn't able to play. So he played a little bit and wasn't really able to do what he wanted, but then he started singing and just brought the house down. And it showed that, you know, even though he didn't have a lot of the facility that he used to have, he still had that swing. It was just ingrained in him.
Yeah. Well, besides being a musician, he was an entertainer, too. And
oh, absolutely. Clark Terry was just a remarkable man. People say, I was talking to one of his mentees, Byron Stripling, who's actually going to be at the Bistro on Saturday. He's in town this week doing a residency for us. He was saying that anytime you met Clark Terry, you come away from it feeling like he was the best friend you had in the world.
Oh, yeah.
You just meet him
yeah.
one time.
Right. That's right. He just drew people to him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And people walked out of his shows, you know, just happy and laughing and really a great person.
I had a chance to talk to him one time. It was on the phone, but it was on the Cityscape program 7 or 8 years ago when he was going to come and perform at the Two Hill. And Jim Widener, who is a professor of music and chair of the Jazz Studies program at UMSL, was in the studio with me when we talked to him. And I found him very affable. But we contacted Jim Widener a little while ago to comment on what Clark Terry's legacy is. And why don't we listen to that?
Clark Terry's greatest legacy to jazz will be probably not only his great playing, which, you know, goes without saying, but his most generous giving of himself to not only every professional musician today, but to every aspiring young musician today. He really had a passion about working with students and passing on his knowledge to them. And having worked with Clark over a number of years and personally witnessing, you know, him doing this and just seeing the effect that it had on young students was just amazing. He had a natural gift for this, and he was so giving of himself just in so many ways. His professional career, of course, is legendary. Over 900 recordings that he's done with, you know, we usually say, you know, in this business that he's performed with. Well, in this case, we say everyone else has performed with Clark Terry. I've got to work with him on many occasions, and, you know, of course, like everyone else, one of the great honors and privileges of my life just to share the stage with him. And when we had him here for the UMSL Greater St. Louis Jazz Festival, we actually had him in twice. The first time in 2006, and then we brought him back in 2011. And at that time, his health had digressed to a point that, sadly, he was not even able to play his horn anymore. But he was still able to to sing and do his vocal thing, which he was almost equally as famous for, particularly when he did Mumbles, which was generated from the old Tonight Show. All we cared about, really, was just having his sheer presence here at the festival, just to share with everyone. And I just remember so vividly when our good friend Don Wolf introduced him that night, and we brought him out to the stage. He had to be assisted with two assistants just to help him out to the stage, because he did not want to come out in a wheelchair. So they helped him to the stage and propped him up on the stool we had there for him. And the minute that he hit the stage, I have never seen an audience come out of their seats for a standing ovation in my entire career. That's how much he was beloved and respected, not only all over the world, but especially here in St. Louis. It was a moment that will live with me forever. There, of course, are so many stories that we could talk about Clark and the many things that he did. And once again, the best thing and the best way to remember our good friend is just for all the great things that he's done for the jazz world. I mean, he was a giant among giants. I do not know of any jazz musician or any person that he ever came into contact with that had nothing but not only great respect, but love for the Clark Terry. I'm just not sure what else I can say. We're all just deeply saddened by, you know, by this loss. We will cherish the great memories that we all have of him for the rest of our lives. You know, next Tuesday, March the 3rd, will be our final season concert with the St. Louis Jazz Orchestra at the Two Hill in the Lee Theater. And our special guest that night with the orchestra will be Margaret Thomas, vocalist. But the concert is going to be dedicated, of course, as there will be so many concerts, thousands of concerts all over the country and probably world that will be dedicated to Clark here over the next whatever period, probably over the next year and beyond. But we are going to dedicate this concert to the memory of Clark Terry. And, of course, for the Jazz Festival this year, in his honor, the Jazz Festival will be dedicated to Clark Terry as well. And so we have some other plans to do over the next year in honor of Clark. So just stay tuned, because you're going to be hearing more.
That's Jim Widener, professor of music and chair of the Jazz Studies Program at the University of Missouri, St. Louis, talking about Clark Terry, the trumpeter and composer who passed away last Saturday at the age of 94. In the studio here, Dennis Owsley, host of St. Louis Public Radio's Jazz Unlimited, and Gene Dobbs Bradford of Jazz St. Louis. A giant among giants, according to Jim Widener.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think that was very well said that, you know, people, you know, you could say that he played with other people, but other people got a chance to play with him. When you talk, you know, when you even look at modern trumpeters like Wynton Marsalis and Terrence Blanchard and Byron Stripling, you know, they all cite him as an influence. But it's not just the trumpet players. People like Terry Lynn Carrington, great drummer, Diane Reeves, great vocalist.
Yeah, she, know, in fact, got her out of Denver.
Mm-hmm.
He got her out of Denver.
That's right.
And presented her, basically.
So it wasn't just teaching trumpet players. I think that, you know, the jazz world is very, you know, very saddened by what's happened. The one thing that I think, the positive thing that can come out of this is that hopefully, you know, by seeing, you know, articles in the paper and hearing about Clark on shows like this, people are going to go to YouTube or go to iTunes and check out some of his great body of work. I mean, he's been on hundreds of recordings.
Over 900 recordings.
And that's one advantage we have, too. His work has been so well documented over the years.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. So if you want to really know the man, I think one of the best ways to do it is to listen to his music, because I think it really reflects him. It's got that beauty that he has. It's got that swing. I mean, he was like one of those guys that had swing sort of ingrained in him. And so even the way he talked, there was something very musical about it.
Right. He was a great storyteller. Mm-hmm. My gosh, he was a great storyteller.
Jim mentioned something, and when I interviewed him, it came up too, that whole mumbles.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about that, and we're going to sample some of it too.
Jim said it started at the Tonight Show. You know, I'm not surprised, but he recorded it with Oscar Peterson and his trio in 1964.
And mumbles is sort of like scatting,
well,
right?
It's scat singing, but you think he's going to say something, and you think he's going to say something even unmentionable, but he never gets there. And sometimes it takes a Scandinavian bent to it. You know, it's just hilarious.
Well, you brought something with you, I think, is Oscar Peterson.
Yeah, this is the original recording of Mumbles. You better get me a show.
That's Clark Terry, and that's the best thing I can almost understand. We're talking about the legacy and the life of the late Clark Terry, who passed away Saturday. We're talking with Dennis Owsley and Gene Dobbs Bradford. He had it going on there.
Yeah, he did. One of the things I think that people may or may not be aware of is what abject poverty he came from.
1920, St. Louis. He was born to a very poor family.
Right, very poor family. After his mother died, his father didn't have anything to do with him. He farmed him out to his sister, who was married to a man by the name of Cy Macfield, who was a tuba player with Dewey Jackson. And that was one of the things that got him started, although apparently as a very young kid, he made himself a trumpet from a hose and a funnel and a piece of pipe for a mouthpiece. Yeah. And was making all kinds of noise. So he's had music ingrained in him from who knows where, probably since he was before we came out of the womb.
I heard that he made so much racket with this thing that his neighbors actually pitched in to get him a real trumpet.
That's funny.
And Dennis, we were talking off there earlier, and you made an interesting point that as far as jazz musicians go, it's sort of rare that one comes from poverty because to become a musician, you need instruments and lessons and support.
Right.
And if you're really poor, you don't have those things.
That's right. But you got to have mentors. You got to have people that are going to help you all the way up. Macfield did it. That got it, passed him on to somebody else, Clarence Hyden Wilson.
I'm glad you said mentors because that's one thing he's known for. That's what he did.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. We're talking Wynton Marsalis, who we've already mentioned, Quincy Jones.
Miles Davis, too.
Yeah.
I mean, even though they were, basically contemporaries, I mean, Clark was a little bit older than Miles, and Miles looked up to him, and Clark was happy to show him the ropes.
When I interviewed Mr. Terry 7 or 8 years ago, whenever it was, the subject of Miles Davis did come up, and he had some interesting things to say about meeting Miles Davis in the early days.
Miles Davis' teacher and I were very good friends. His name was Elwood Buchanan. He used to tell me all the time, man, you got to come over to school. He taught over in East St. Louis at Lincoln High. He said, you got to come over here and hear this little kid, man, a little kid named Dewey Davis. Miles' middle name was Dewey. I'm not so sure that he was named after a great trumpet player in St. Louis by the name of Dewey Jackson. Mm-hmm. But I understand that his dad's name was Dewey also. So anyhow, he used to insist, man, you got to come over and hear this Dewey Davis. So I finally got a chance to go over to East St. Louis and meet Miles Davis. He was very thin, really, really, really thin. And as a matter of fact, if he was stood sideways in school, they'd mark him absent. he was thin enough to ride a rooster. The funny thing about it, most people don't know this, but he was, along with a whole lot of other people, big fan of Harry James. But he used to kind of overindulge in the wavelength. He used to wave it at every note. Aye, 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 aye. And Buchanan used to have a long ruler with a big wad of tape on the end of it. He said, stop checking that note. Every time you check that note, I'm going to hit you on the hand. So Miles would check the note and bap, you'd get a big crash from the ruler with the tape on the tape. So he said, don't check that note. Keep that tone pure. And I guess that was probably the beginning of Miles' straight puritanical sound.
That's from an interview I did with Clark Terry in 2006, and that was Jim Wagner, by the way. You could hear laughing. He was part of that interview as well. Yeah, a funny guy. Tell me this. You'll have to explain to me. The flugelhorn, I know, is very close to a trumpet. And didn't Clark Terry sort of play a key role in that instrument becoming part of jazz music?
I think he was the first one. I may be wrong on that. But a flugelhorn basically has the same length of pipe as a trumpet, but it's just got one curve. And a trumpet has several curves in that pipe. And so the sound is very different, but it's fingered the same way and everything else. And as trumpet players get older, they play more flugelhorn because it's easier to blow.
You know, he was talking about Miles Davis there, and there was a documentary that came out, I think it was just last year, Keeping On, Keeping On. But also his autobiography, Clark Terry's autobiography, I guess a couple of years ago, Dennis?
Yeah.
And he tells a sort of unsettling story about Miles Davis.
Well, it seems that one day he was in New York and he was walking along and saw this bundle of clothes laying in the gutter. And all of a sudden he realized there was a man there, and it was Miles. So he takes him home and he cleans him up, gets him some food and all of that, and then goes off to a gig. Comes back from the gig, and everything in his apartment was gone. Because Miles, at that time, had a very bad heroin addiction. So that'll do that to you, apparently. Mm-hmm. And you lose all your moral compass and everything else.
Gene, do you have a favorite story about Clark Terry?
Well, you know, I do want to mention something about the documentary Keep On Keeping On.
Oh,
which
boy.
I think that is something that people should really see.
It's gotten a critical acclaim, has it not?
It really has.
Yeah.
I just saw it at the Tivoli a few months ago, and it's just beautiful, and it shows what Clark was all about. It's dealing with him and a young pianist named Jason Coughlin, and this young man would come down to visit Clark Terry at his house or sometimes at a hospital that he was in, and he would sit there and Clark would just teach, even though he's bedridden.
Right.
He was still teaching. He's still giving back.
Yeah.
So you may wonder, you know, why does this young man, you know, does this young man have this relationship with Clark? But then pretty soon it becomes apparent that he's doing this for other. So, you know, I think that's one of the things that kept him going, that got him to 94, is the fact that he just kept on working with young musicians and kept passing on the knowledge that he has. And if you get a chance, hopefully it'll be in theaters or on the internet or something like that, that you can see Keep On Keeping On. It's a really sweet movie.
It really is. And one of the things that it shows, too, is the humanity that Clark has, you know. I mean, humanity and caring for other people, which is really important.
Dennis, let's sample a little of Clark Terry's work come Sunday.
Yeah, this is a part of Ellington's Black, Brown, and Beige symphony, basically. And that was, I think, Clark's favorite Ellington tune because he recorded it more than anything else. And he's heard here on flugelhorn, on Come Sunday. It's just gorgeous.
And that was a recording of Clark Terry, Come Sunday. In conclusion, again, Gene, there's going to be a tribute this weekend.
Yeah, we have Byron Stripling, who was actually mentored by Clark Terry, great trumpet player, vocalist. He's going to be performing on Saturday at Jazz at the Bistro, and he's going to be doing a tribute to Clark Terry.
And Dennis, this Sunday on Jazz Unlimited from 9 to 12, which you've been doing, I can't believe it, 32 years. You're going to be devoting your program
to
Sunday.
Yeah, the show is called Remembering Clark Terry, and in addition to his music, I've got about 27 to 29 minutes of interview material. And there's one nine-minute segment where he's telling stories. And it's just wonderful to hear.
I'll give you each a final word.
His legacy lives on, so do yourself a favor and check it out.
Yeah, I think everybody should see that film, learn a little bit more about how to be human. And also, we've just lost a national treasure.
Clark Terry died last Saturday at the age of 94. His funeral is tomorrow morning in New York. We want to thank Dennis Owsley of Jazz Unlimited on St. Louis Public Radio and Gene Dobbs Bradford, President and CEO of Jazz St. Louis. Thank you for helping us remember a great man and St. Louis, and thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next on Cityscape, penguins at the St. Louis Zoo. This is St. Louis Public Radio.